Jesus said, in this world, you will have tribulation. I wish that Jesus would have given us some other kind of promise, like, if you follow me, you won't have any trouble at all. You won't have any tribulation. If you follow me, then you won't face a storm. But we see that even when Jesus took the disciples, put them in a boat, and sent them out into the ocean, they hit a storm. He had sent them there. And another time they got into the boat, he said, let's get in the boat and go to the other side. In the middle of the storm, they were terrified. Jesus had told them, let's go to the other side. It didn't mean let's go perish in the middle of the lake, but let's make it to the other side. And sometimes we just gotta batten down the hatches. We just have to know, I am gonna be able to ride out this storm. I need to put my eyes on Jesus, fix my gaze, and move forward. Some of you guys may be in a storm now in the midst of your life. And you may think, why is God allowing me to do this? My answer to that is, how much time do you have? God could be doing myriads of things in the midst of storms. Number one, God may just be strengthening you. He may be testing your faith. He may be correcting you. He may be doing a work inside of you that has nothing to do with correction at all. It's just God wanting to do a work through a storm in the midst of your life. It may have nothing to do with you, and it may have everything to do with the people that are watching you. Anybody can follow Jesus on a calm, white, sandy beach when everything is good. But when life takes its ugly turns, and trust me, and you know this, life can turn on a dime. You can be heading down a certain direction, and suddenly there is a turn, and you go a completely different direction. Here in chapter 27, Paul's finally on his way to Rome. All the way back in Jerusalem, after he had been arrested, Paul was concerned one night, and the Lord appeared to him. Only a handful of times that Jesus appeared to anybody, and he appeared to Paul. You might say, well, I want Jesus to appear to me. Why doesn't he appear to me? What is the deal? Why does Paul get someone to appear to him? Well, I'll tell you what. Why don't you go through what Paul did? Being shipwrecked several times, being scourged 5 times, beaten with rods 3 times, stoned and left for dead 1 time. And that's the beginning of the list of Paul's difficulties. Paul laid down his life as a complete and total sacrifice to go out and to be used by God to bring the gospel to the Gentiles. And because of that, he is now arrested. And the Lord stood by him and said, Paul, as you have testified of me in Jerusalem, you will also testify of me in Rome. Now, Paul's going to do that through a prison ship, as we're going to see today. God sometimes, it seems, is into economical movements. Rather than, you know, a cruise boat, a pleasure boat, Paul's taking a prison ship, any ship they can find with other prisoners that are on their way. But I got to think that Paul's excited. God had told him, as you testify of me in Jerusalem, you will also in Rome. Now he's on his way. He has appealed to Caesar, which is like appealing to the Supreme Court. He's on his way to go stand before him. Paul's got to be excited. I don't know whether everybody else is as excited to be going to Rome. The other prisoners, they'd be going to Rome because, well, to finish their trials, perhaps. Perhaps as prisoners who are condemned, they would be going to Rome to be executed. During this particular time, Nero is the emperor, and Nero killed thousands of people in the arenas. Not just the main arena there in Rome, but thousands of people in these arenas, and these people would be on their way to give their lives. Now, verse 1 of chapter 27 says, and when it was decided that we should sail to Italy, right away you need to note the we. The we there is who? Paul and Luke. We know that. Luke, who wrote the book of Acts. And when it was decided that we should sail to Italy, they delivered Paul and some other prisoners to one named Julius, a centurion of the Augustan regiment. So entering a ship of Anadrotum, we put to sea, meaning to sail along the coast of Asia. Archelaus, a Macedonian from Thessalonica, was with us. This is just a guy that seems to pop up from time to time in the life of Paul. When you study him, he's got a supportive role with him. It says, in the next day, we landed in Sidon, and Julius treated Paul kindly and gave him liberty to go with his friends to receive care. We take it at this point, Paul must have been facing some kind of an illness. A little bit later on, in the last chapter, we're going to read of Paul laying hands on people and healing them. And yet Paul himself was in need of some care. We all had put to sea from there and sailed under the shelter of Cyprus because the winds were contrary. Sailing in those days was unlike sailing today. You can, if you sail, and some of you guys have done it, you can tack. You can sail even into the wind by tacking into the wind. We have the technology today to be able to do it. Boats in their day could not do it. When the wind was contrary, you would try to find as much shelter as you could. They went up on an island and they tried to sail with an island, just trying to make it because the winds were contrary. And when we had sailed over the sea, which is off Sicilia and Pamphylia, what am I saying wrong there? Cilicia. Thank you. Cilicia and Pamphylia. We came to Myra and the city of Lycia. There the centurion found an Alexandrian ship sailing to Italy and put us aboard. When we had sailed slowly many days and arrived with difficulty off of Cnidus, the wind not permitting us to proceed, we sailed under the shelter of Crete and Salam. Passing it with difficulty, we came to a place called Fair Havens near the city of Lycia. Now, Fair Havens was a small port. Already they've had difficulty. They're kind of sailing during the wrong time of the year. They're trying to make it in before winter. It's in the fall. They're trying to make it in before winter. They think they can get there, but the winds began to blow contrary, perhaps even early. Now, verse 9, when much time had been spent and sailing was now dangerous because of the feast was already over, Paul advised them, saying, "Men, I perceive that this voyage will end with disaster and much loss, not only of the cargo and ship, but also of our lives." Nevertheless, the centurion was more persuaded by the helmsman and the owner of the ship than by the things that Paul spoke. So now Paul says, "I perceive." Paul doesn't say, "God told me." Paul simply says, "I perceive." Paul speaks of being in four shipwrecks. Some believe that that is four shipwrecks besides this one. If that is the case, Paul survived five shipwrecks. He knew a little bit about being out on the water. And maybe he's looking at it going, "You know, winter's on its way. We've already had difficulties. You guys want to go on further? I perceive that there's going to be some danger here." Maybe God did give him some insight, and Paul didn't say, "Thus says the Lord." But Paul's a prisoner, Paul's a preacher, Paul's a rabbi, not a sailor, and certainly not the owner of the ship. And so the centurion listened to them and said, and it says, "And because the harbor was not suitable to winter in," probably again because it was small, finding provisions would be difficult, and it's not a place, Fair Havens wasn't a place that sailors wanted to spend the winter. It says, the majority advised to set sail from there also, if by any means they could reach Phoenix, which was a very suitable place for the ship to winter. It had all kinds of bars. It had all kinds of provisions for them, a harbor of Crete opening towards the southwest and the northwest, and winter there. They come to make a decision. It's a majority decision. We live in a country where we take votes and the majority rules. But I don't know that the majority always make good decisions. It's one of the reasons that I've said for years now, and I mean years, for like 25 years plus, in the very beginning days, we had some decisions to make. Were we going to be a church that talked about political things, or were we going to focus in on the things of God and not focus in on the political things? Every political season, and we have got a doozy coming up now. Every political season, there are people that get mad at me because somehow they think if we get involved, we're going to affect who's going to win. Now, I believe in voting. We need to vote. We need to vote our conscience. We need to be involved in the process. I'm not saying that. But here's what I'm saying, that whoever gets elected is not going to do what we want them to do. They're going to be making decisions that are according to this world that we are not a part of. We need to individually be involved in that process, but we will not encourage people to try to get involved in that political process from the church. The church for us is a place where the pulpit is set apart for the word of God, and we don't do it. Now, no doubt there's going to be some upset with me. There already are some that are upset with me, which is one of the reasons that I'm just putting it out there. We're not going to do it. And take heart if you're the political sort, if you're a ditto head, if you just can't get enough and you want to listen to the radio all week and then come to church and listen to it again, I think we should. There's churches out there you can go to. It doesn't matter, Democrat or Republican. There's churches out there that will talk all you want about the Democratic side. There's churches out there talk all you want about the Republican side. And I would rather us just focus in on the things of God. The whole ship said, let's go. Let's take off. That's not the best way to make decisions, by the way. Sometimes even trying to weigh who the best expert would be is not the best way to make decisions. This guy Julius had to make the best decision that he could, but he ended up following the majority because they wanted to set sail, and that ended up being a problem for them. It says, when the south wind blew shortly, supposing they had obtained their desire, putting out to sea, they sailed close by Crete. But not long afterwards, a tempestuous headwind arose, the Euroclydon. So when the ship was caught and could not head into the wind, they let her drive. And running under the shelter of an island called Claudia, we secured the skiff with difficulty. The skiff was the small boat that they would save their lives with. So they had some problems securing it. And when they had taken it on board, they used cables to undergird the ship. I imagine in their day, again, they don't have a lot of direction control. The ship gets caught in these winds and is blown out to sea. And if you're following a map at all when you're looking at this, they're on one side trying to kind of go up the coast, stay close to the coast as they can, and go across the Adriatic and get to Rome. That's their hope. When they get to a certain point, the wind starts blowing, and it blows them out into the middle of the Mediterranean Sea. Now that they're there, they're worried about blowing all the way over to North Africa and crashing there. And so they use cables to undergird the ship. And fearing lest they should run aground on the Sardis sands, which is a long ways away from where they are, they struck sail, and so they were driven. They just put the sail up and decided, let's let the wind take us with the sail in the direction that we're going to go. And because we were exceedingly tempest-tossed, the next day they lightened the ship. Just to throw all the provisions and everything you don't need at that moment over the ship. You know, at this point, they are worried about their lives. On the third day, we threw the ship's tackle overboard with our own hands. Now they've gotten rid of everything they don't need, and then they get rid of everything they need. Because again, the ship is probably falling apart. Waves that beat against these wooden ships would be absolutely brutal. And it's busting apart. They needed to get it as light as they could to have it not sink in the water as much that it was beaten on by the waves. And when neither sun nor stars appeared for many days, and no small tempest beat on us, all hope that we would be saved was finally given up. The sun and the stars don't shine for 3 days, and it continues to beat on them, and finally, all hope is gone. Now, God knew that the storm was on its way. God's big enough that God could have communicated to them not to go. God's big enough he could have made circumstances so they couldn't go. God's big enough that he could have stopped the storm. But God wanted them in the middle of the storm. What do you think happens when a bunch of sailors are hopeless. When they're looking at the end of their lives, had God protected Paul, there would have never have been the opportunity for them to see and experience the things about God that they saw and experienced. I am persuaded that we never stand more, that we never shine more brightly for Christ than in the midst of our storms. It's then that people are watching us. We say, God, why did you let it happen? And sometimes it's the unthinkable that happens. 4 or 5 years ago, Greg Laurie lost his son, Christopher, 32 years old, in an automobile accident. The Sunday morning that came by afterwards, Greg went out and just made an appearance, not to preach, just to go talk to the people for a moment. And he said, I just have one thing to tell you here today, that the unthinkable has happened to me. I would never choose to go down this road, but I'm going down it. And he said, but I want you to know that I still believe. And it's during those times that our faith stands as a solid shield, that I truly trust in God. When my first wife, my late wife, was diagnosed with cancer, there's a strange peace in the midst of all of it. And for the year and a half that it took for her life to finally be taken, there was opportunity for her to be able to shine for Christ in incredible ways. And there are still people impacted by the stand that she made for the Lord, by the stand that we went through in serving God through all of it. 2 weeks after she passed, on the first service I did was a New Year's Eve service. And I said, I don't know if I'm ready to come back. And everybody was telling me, you think you're ready to come back and preach? You think you're ready to come back and preach? I said to everybody who asked, no, I don't think I'm ready. But what am I going to do? If I can't go in and look at God's word and do what I do, what am I going to do? Just sit around the house? I'll tell you, there were a few passages that were difficult to teach during those days. We were in the book of Exodus. We taught about the children of Israel getting trapped by the Red Sea and then God opening up the Red Sea and letting them go through. In the midst of my pain, I remember saying to God, it was one of those moments, I have very few of them where I get angry at God, but I remember in preparation of that study saying, why didn't you open up a way in the Red Sea? You who can work miracles, why didn't you work miracles? Because God has a bigger picture in mind than just us. That's why when God takes us through the storm, if it comes to the end of our lives, and if I can say anything about Lisa, she died well. She died well, pointing to Christ the entire time. Now Paul's on this ship with all of these men who have given up hope completely. But it says then in verse 21, but long after abstinence from food, then Paul stood in the midst of them and said, men, you should have listened to me. Which cracks me up. Paul says, I told you so. But this provides Paul an opportunity to say, you should have listened to me, now you need to listen to me. It provides some proof for Paul that in the midst of this all, he has the words that can save them. Men, you should have listened to me and not have sailed from Crete and incurred this disaster and loss. And now I urge you to take heart, for there will be no loss of life among you, but only the ship. For there stood by me this night an angel of God to whom I belong and whom I serve, saying, do not be afraid, Paul. You must be brought before Caesar. And indeed, God has granted you all of those who sail with you. I love that because of Paul, the lives of the people around them were affected. I call this the umbrella effect. If you serve God and live for him, your children find themselves under that umbrella. People around you, family and friends, are influenced by God because you choose to serve God. It's one of the things that I like to tell people shortly after they give a commitment to Christ. I say, you came forward, but who knows who else is going to be saved because you came forward. Who knows who all we bring with us. And so God granted Paul the lives of all of those who were with him. He goes on to say here, Therefore, take heart, men. I believe God that it will be just as it was told to me. Now Paul has an opportunity to testify of Jesus before these men. Where were sailors going to hear the message of the gospel? Where were prisoners going to hear the message of the gospel? If God had stopped the storm, there wouldn't have been this opportunity with each of these individuals. He says, do not be afraid, Paul. Therefore, take heart, men, for I believe that God, it will be just as he has told me. However, we must run aground on a certain island. Now, when the 14th night came, this is no small event, right? When the 14th night came, as we were driven up and down the Adriatic Sea, about midnight the sailors sensed that they were drawing near some land. And they took soundings, and they found it to be 20 fathoms. And when they had gone a little further, they took soundings again and found it to be 15 fathoms. Then, fearing lest they should run aground on the rocks, they dropped four anchors from the stern and prayed for day to come. And as the sailors were seeking to escape from the ship, and when they had let down a skiff into the sea under the pretense of putting out anchors from the prow, Paul said to the centurion, the soldiers, unless these men stay in the ship, they cannot be saved. Then the soldiers cut away the ropes and the skiff, and they let it fall. And as the day was about to dawn, Paul implored them to all take food, saying, today is the 14th day. You have waited and continued without food and eaten nothing. Therefore, I urge you to take nourishment, for this is for us survival, since not a hair will fall from the head of any of you. And when he had said these things, he took bread and gave thanks to God in the presence of them all. And when he had broken it, he began to eat. Then they were all encouraged and also took food themselves. And in all were 276 persons on this ship. So when they had eaten enough, they lightened the ship and threw out the wheat into the sea. It's 276 persons on the boat, and we wonder, why is God taking Paul through the midst of this storm? They could have something to do with it. How many people would be represented by us who are here? That we go through storms in our lives, and how many people see those things or go through it with us, and we're able to share Christ in the midst of all of those things. Verse 17, it came to pass after 3 days that Paul called the leaders of the Jews together. Where am I at? I got completely lost, by the way. Let's go back to 27 instead of 28. I'm like, what happened? The religious leaders were on the ship. When it was day, they did not recognize the land, but they observed a bay with a beach onto which they planned to run the ship if possible. And they let go of the anchors and left them in the sea. Meanwhile, losing the rudder ropes, and they hoisted the mainsail to the wind and made for shore. But striking a place where two seas meet, they ran the ship aground, and the prow stuck fast, remained immovable, but the stern was being broken by the violence of the waves. And the soldiers' plan was to kill the prisoners, lest any of them should swim away and escape. But the centurion, wanting to save Paul, kept them from this purpose, and commanded them that they should jump overboard first to get to land. And the rest, some on boards, and this is the first instance of surfing in the Bible. That just has to be said at this particular point. And the rest, some on boards. You just do wonder if this is the beginning. I mean, just one of them caught a wave, and it just took off. And they were like, hey, that was pretty fun. And some on parts of the ship. And so it was that they all escaped safely to land. Again, difficulties and hardships, we're never promised that we won't face them. If anything, we're promised that we're going to have them. The Bible also says to rejoice when you are persecuted for your faith. Not only do we face difficulties and hardships and storms of lives that arise, but at times we are persecuted because of our faith, and we need to rejoice in that. Paul had not written at this point, I don't think, Romans 8:28. And we know that all things work together for the good to those who love him, to those who are called according to his purpose. God has a plan in everything that we go through. And it didn't say, that verse doesn't say, and God makes all things to work out for our purpose, but that God causes them. In other words, God doesn't always make the things happen. Sometimes they're just storms that are happening, and God uses them in our lives for our own benefit and for the benefit of those who are around us. Could it be the difficulties that you're facing today? Could it be the twists and turns that life has taken is not for your benefit, but for the benefit of those around you? That you could stop and say, Lord, what do you want me to do here? Seek God in the midst of it, that you can be used to make a difference in the lives of people around you in the midst of the storm.